Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy Department time, boys and girls. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Quite well, quite well. Have the day off from my day job and just relaxing, doing some gardening, doing some stuff around the house. You know, it's been nice and productive.
I'm having a rough day, gotta tell you.
Oh, I'm sorry, pal.
I got a tattoo over the weekend. And
Wait, you got a tattoo of the weekend?
Over the weekend.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no. A tattoo of the weekend would be definitely weird. What, especially because you'd have to think about, like, well, what haircut of the weekends?
Which, yeah.
That'd be a struggle. But it's at the recovery. The tattoo looks great. The recovery stage is a little rough right now.
So. How? What kind of tattoo are we talking here? I'm familiar with a lot of your tattoo work.
This is a smaller than the last piece one. It's
okay.
Yeah, you know, about 3 hours worth of needle time.
That's a lot, though.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Well, I like color, so you know, your color's gonna add you some time.
Uh huh.
So I got that going on, but more importantly, there's a blizzard that has started. Yeah, it's April 10th.
I don't know if you know this. It's mid-April.
Yeah. It's second year in a row that we have gotten. Last year, we got a foot and a half in April. This year, estimates are mixed because it's like mixing with some rain, depending on the temperature.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, they think we get 7 to 10 by the time it's all done.
I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but there's a place called California.
There's really a place called anywhere else.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I feel like
that doesn't really happen any other place.
I mean, you know, you came from one of the few places where it probably is also snowing.
There's a few. You're right.
But yeah, just about anywhere else I wouldn't have to put up with this mess. But here I am. Mm-hmm. So now we got to try to, you know, get everything ready over here for, you know, maybe people not being able to get to work tomorrow and
batten down the hatches. So
yeah. Good times. And I'm missing Champions League. So we can do this. So let's go. I got skin falling off my arm. It's rough.
Of all the indignities.
It's rough. I know.
The Champions League. Ugh.
This is like the quarterfinals, like the best round.
I gotcha. I understand. Times are tough all over.
Glamour teams are playing. all right. We have plenty of ground to cover on
okay.
the show. We've got, I mean, if you were here last week, you know from the homework all the stuff that we got. But we got TV out the wazoo to get to. And I guess we should start by closing the book on You're the Worst. What do you say?
Okay, yeah.
Because everything else is new, pretty much, or returning.
Sounds right.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this final season as a whole. I think that... like many shows that sort of get a 2 year pickup to close things out, you know, year two of that usually benefits from that transaction. And I think really having an understanding of how they wanted to end this story helped the season as a whole. I'm not sure how I feel about the way that these characters necessarily ended up.
Really?
But I think it was true to them, and I don't think it's all that important, the specifics of where it is they landed, because I think...
Well, how do you mean that?
How do I mean that?
What did you not like about the way they landed?
I don't know. Maybe it's not so much the way that they landed, but the sort of the weird flash-forward device in which we got there. You know what I mean? And then the... You know, the music montage that I feel like is a little bit pro forma for these kinds of shows now.
What?
In the middle? You know what I mean? I think that's maybe more of my issue than necessarily like, well.
You didn't like the Mountain Goats music cue.
Mountain Goats music cue is fine. No, and the music in the show is uniformly good. You know, like they have a sharp indie rock supervisor.
Brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant stroke. Do you know that song? Because I know that song.
I don't know that particular Mountain Goats song, no. I heard it right away, and I'm like, oh, Mountain Goats, but I didn't know that song.
Did you read the lyrics?
I did not read the lyrics, no.
I would recommend looking at the lyrics. It's this heartbreaking, we're going down in flames together, sort of off-putting love song.
Yeah.
Like, the lyrics literally include, I hope you die, I hope we both die.
Can you imagine these two procreating?
Yeah. The lyrics also include, I'm drowning, there's no sign of air, you're coming down with me, hand in unlovable hand. Or there's no sign of land, rather. You're coming down with me, hand in unlovable hand. It's just, it's almost like the show was based on the song.
Yeah. Well, that's fitting, for sure.
And I just thought everything about it, the way it ended, was fitting. I really did. I thought that first of all, the whole every day I choose you thing feels very them and very, like, stupidly subversive in the way they liked to be stupidly subversive over the course of the show. And also incredibly romantic, right? And I would say, as far as the flash forward thing goes, there were lots of times over the course of the season that the notion of they're doing a thing, they're doing a future Jimmy and Gretchen thing, and they're still together, they're just doing a thing. They're doing a bit. It certainly occurred to me, and yet when that was the ending, it sort of like surprised and delighted me. And so I also thought there were some really nice touches. Like you've mentioned throughout the season, like they brought back a lot of side characters in a wonderful way. The Ben Folds arc was fun. The Edgar's fake cereal pod that he's listening to.
Yeah. I loved everything about Edgar's whole arc.
Whole arc was fantastic. The I mentioned the song already. There was a couple of subtle time jumps where, like, Jimmy walked out a door, and for a second you didn't even realize it was the future. I kind of like that. And just in general, like, the whole thing, and the very ending even, I thought was like, sort of a fitting microcosm of the whole show. They're together, they're, like, emotional, she suddenly, like, is all of a sudden like, you know, I might jump in front of a train, and he's like,
yeah,
makes a horrible joke, and they both laugh and eat pancakes, and like,
yeah, that part I liked. I honestly, you know, maybe it's just the jump forward to the second wedding that I think I had a hard time with. I don't know, because a lot of the rest of it I did like. That final, like you said, the final scene was very appropriate, and I think it was all, you know, true to who they were. This is a show, I think, that's almost really built on a sense of knowing who its characters are and not apologizing for that and begrudgingly growing them. You know what I mean?
I was recommending this show earlier today, and that's not exactly what I said, but that's very much the sentiment I was conveying. It more than anything, it's hard to say, like, what the exact tone of this show is over its, what, five seasons, what exactly it's about, any of that stuff, other than it's all really dictated by these characters.
Yeah. Like, this show could have been The League. And I don't say that to knock The League, because I love The League.
I think Always Sunny is a better comparison.
Or Always Sunny, yeah. Like, it could have been just, look at these people, they're off the rails, and let's delight in their off-the-railsness. And the show does plenty of delighting in their off the railsness, but you know what I mean? It's also about more than that.
Even though they're at times they are unreally off the rails and just horrible. And that, you know, the name of the show, for God's sakes, it's right in there.
Yeah. But like, I mean, if you look at the opening credits too, when you know, there's of, you know, the actors are sort of in these signs that are written, warning signs that are written up and posted about them around town. Like, it could have been that show. There's probably an iteration of that show that's pretty enjoyable, actually.
But it managed to be so much more, and I think that's what sets this show apart. And really just trying to take a step back, you know, several days, almost a week after watching that finale, like, this really just is one of my favorite shows of all time. I just think it's so well done from beginning to end, and manages to be both smart and interesting and unique and also ridiculously evilly funny. I have a really great feeling about after watching this show and sitting back and thinking about five seasons of being entertained by what it is. It's one of my faves.
All right. I mean, that's really strong. Like, so when you're saying one of your favorite shows of all time, are you talking like one of your top 10, one of your top five shows of all time?
I think probably, you know, look, this is one of those things where it's like when you talk about the top five basketball players of all time. Like, people, I got mad at me recently for saying I don't think Kobe Bryant's in my top 20. And, like, it's hard to explain to people that's not an insult to Kobe Bryant. It's just crowded up there.
Yeah, dude, I honestly would get mad at you if you said Kobe Bryant's in your top 20.
But my point is, my instinct is, yeah, this is like a top 10 show for me. If we actually tried to list, it might end up 15th. I don't know. But it's when I think of it, I think of it incredibly fondly. And if people are like, what's a show I've never watched that I would like? It's one of the first go-tos for me because I think it's underknown and brilliant.
I definitely think it's underknown, and I wish more people had seen it. I sort of feel like you're a little bit like, you know, it's almost like you're like, Saquon Barkley's the most talented running back I've ever seen. You know what I mean?
But if I said he's one of the top five most talented I've ever seen, that could be accurate, could it not?
My point was more, you know, like, yeah, Saquon Barkley's awesome. He's super talented. But maybe we need to slow down a little bit. This is all I'm saying. I think it's a great comedy, and I think it's underseen, particularly relative to a lot of the other things that are considered great comedies right now. So I don't want to quibble with it too much.
In a way that not as many things can say, it's more than just a comedy.
Yeah, I will miss these characters in my life for sure.
Yeah.
Are you more sad? You're more sad to see this go than Broad City, I would say.
Definitely.
Me
Even
too.
Though I really like Broad City. It's nothing against Broad City. Thumbs all the way up on Broad City.
Very different kind of show.
What?
Very different kind of show, too, I think.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Is like Broad, to me, I would say what you're saying about You're the Worst, that's what I would say about Broad City. Great comedy. Funny, subversive, smart, excellent. But this has a special place in my heart because it's doing a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with Broad City made a choice to do different things, and that's totally fine. And it works for them. But this is just this is a slightly elevated for my taste.
OK, I think I can come with a few comedies that you like more. But that's the story for today.
Well, I'm curious now. What do you have in mind?
Well, certainly like, say, I don't know, like a Parks and Rec or...
No. I certainly like this better than Parks and Rec.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was not a huge Parks and... I didn't even watch Parks and Rec when it was on.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move on.
I'm not going to tell you this is like a superior show to Parks and Rec, but for me, I would definitely like, if someone was like, I haven't seen either, I would say watch You're the Worst.
Okay. All right. You know, now we're one of those places. It's going to be like, you know, if we get to the MVP conversation where it's like, you know, I have a preference, but I don't want my preference for one to be an indictment of the other.
That's exactly right. I have nothing bad to say about Parks and Rec.
I would strongly disagree with your preference. Without saying anything bad about You're the Worst, which I love. and, yeah, and would recommend
it. Yeah, same thing. So we're on opposite sides of this, but that's kind of my point. This is among those great comedies where neither of us want to say bad about things about either one, but for me personally, You're the Worst is way, way up there.
Okay. Ahead of, like, Insecure for you? I know you love Insecure.
Now we're having an interesting conversation. And having finished, like, I'm done with You're the Worst, and it just so rarely disappoints. Like, You're the Worst is, or Insecure rather, is in that conversation but let's see what happens.
You're the Worst had, like, season three of You're the Worst was a little iffy, wasn't it?
It wasn't as good, but to me, it there have been worse episodes of Insecure in two or three seasons?
Yeah.
Than that season of You're the Worst was for me.
Okay.
But again, like that, now I'm dissing two shows that I really have nothing bad to say about. So this is a pointless conversation, but I was merely trying to illustrate how much I really love this show.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying it's, you know, I loved it. I'll still take Seinfeld. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not even, that's hard to compare.
You know? All right. Let's talk about another comedy that I think we both love. Actually, it might be interesting when it's all said and done to line the show up against Brockmire.
Yeah, I think Brockmire feels more like the league to me, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, Brockmire is certainly a broader and bawdier comedy than You're the Worst is.
Yeah,
it's that show sort of that we were talking about when we were talking about kind of maybe reveling in some of the, but I just think it does it so well, and. I'm encouraged with the table that's sort of been set here in season three, you know, with kind of new adversaries laid out with the presence of J.K. Simmons. Simons?
Yes.
Simmons or Simons? Simmons. Okay. Who was, you know, fantastic and so good at playing a prick. You know what I mean?
So good at that. And I feel like hasn't done it this broadly in a while, but it's really delightful. And I, you know, this is probably people, listeners, this is probably just like a theme of my taste at this point, but like I understand. Sure, there have been a lot of them and some people are fed up with dick and poop jokes, but a well-executed dick joke is kind of undefeated in my book.
Yeah.
And just between, it's so baseball, but also so repulsively hilarious that Matt the Bat is a dick nickname.
Yeah.
it fits on, it's like so the taste of this show. It's so baseball. It's just perfect. And he is playing a guy who would be nicknamed Matt the Bat because of his penis antics so perfectly. Like, I feel like it's pretty niche, right? Like, I don't know how many people are baseball fans enough to appreciate the baseballiness of it and also interested in really incredibly dumb and vile dick jokes, but that's me.
Yeah, this is a show that just sort of feels very precisely set to our wavelengths.
Yeah. I don't know I don't know how big this audience of you and me and our compatriots is, but this for like a raunchy comedy for that audience, it's literally, how could it be better? It's basically perfect.
Yep. Yep. I think that the working, you know, watching Brockmire work his way through sobriety is really excellent. I think giving him a Jessica Mendoza type as a partner, I think was really great. And like,
well,
her line about his transformation from drunk asshole to sober asshole not being as brilliant as he thinks it is, it just was so great and cutting. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Well, she's excellent, but also like, his particular attitude, which is really socially liberal and open-minded and thoughtful combined with colossally narcissistic prick is so perfect for the, like, again, if you're aware of and in the world of the dumb conversations that happen in the real baseball world around people like Jessica Mendoza, it's just so, I mean, it is satirically thoughtful in those ways too. And it's a great show.
Yep. Having Richard Kind aboard. And I saw a little thing where, they were talking, about this, those two guys haven't really worked together, which seems weird, right?
Yeah.
You know, just sort of given the resumes.
Right.
They're a great pair as well. And, you know, having him aboard to sort of be the guy that, you know, reminds you of the sad sackness of being the backup announcers for the A's. You know, is on the announcing totem pole. No offense to whoever's backstopping Ken Korak, because Ken Korak's great.
I think it's Chris Townsend at the moment. But I think the only thing I ended up writing down, because then I just started laughing, was that was shots at the A's, right? Like, the whole premise of the show is shots at the Oakland A's too, is it not?
I mean, is it really a shot at the A's to say that they're the cheapest team in the league? Like, they're,
I mean, it might be
their locker room is a
shot.
Literal sewer. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, so it's like it's an honest shot, but it is a shot nonetheless, right?
I guess, you know. I
feels
mean,
feels like it.
They, you know, they look. They're not, and I shouldn't say the A's are not like the that could be the Tampa Bay Rays easily as well. Like, there are a
they're
couple other
obviously
teams
among
that
the
in
cheapest
that. Yes.
teams in the league, though.
But yeah, they're right there. What's a good way to put it?
but that's still not a nice thing to say.
No, it's not.
And that's kind of the entire premise of the season.
Yeah,
I don't know. I found it funny in the A's versus Giants versus audience world that I live in.
Yeah, now you want to talk about stuff that's like specifically tuned to your wavelength,
right?
We're really getting into it now. But I don't know, like, and maybe it's my turn to kind of just drop aboard the hyperbole train. Like, I just feel like this show is as consistently delivers as much as any comedy on TV. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say it's the best or anything, but I enjoy every episode of Brockmire, and I hope they keep making more, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. I totally agree. And I don't think that's hyperbole. If you were like, this is the best show on TV, it would be hyperbole.
Yeah.
But, like, it does – this is a very bizarre backwards analogy. But I don't love blueberries. Not because a really good blueberry isn't delicious, but because I think a mediocre blueberry is pretty bad, and the hit rate on blueberries is very low. Whereas – you know, strawberries, I love in part because a great strawberry is one of the best things ever, but also because an average strawberry I still think is delicious, and most strawberries are at least average, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
Brockmire, just fucking Brockmire's strawberries, man.
There are laughs in every episode.
Yeah, it's just funny every time out.
Good.
It's a great timeout.
I'm vaguely curious. I know we're going off topic, but since we're in the land of IFC, any, like, is there any heightened interest for you at all in documentary now that, you know, they're mostly doing episodes that are free of your boy?
Not especially. I'm not opposed to watching it when you're like, oh, this one's really good, but I don't know.
Like, the bowling one they did last week was really funny. So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I like
in a different
show.
In a different world where there wasn't so damn much, like, this would probably be a different conversation.
Yeah. I don't know, the idea, and I, you know, I like Fred Armisen, obviously, so I didn't mind his presence when it's there. But the idea that they're really kind of now sort of expanding into the wider Saturday Night Live and alum universe to do these episodes is exciting to me. Because, I don't know, I just feel like it opens up a chance for them to do a lot of stories. And I like documentaries, so.
Well, good for you.
Speaking of which, maybe we should talk about the documentary that we watched this week. And I think we mentioned last week in the homework. We didn't necessarily have it in the homework. But both you and I saw The Inventor, which is an Alex Gibney. I was not aware that Alex Gibney was making this movie. Documentary.
I don't know who that is. Am I supposed to know who that is?
He just makes a lot of documentaries.
Okay.
And they're good.
What did you think of this movie?
I thought it was a fascinating story that I had no idea about. Some Alex Gibney documentaries, Going Clear of the Scientology, one that was on HBO a couple of years ago. The Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, which was Academy Award nominated.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, he's made a bunch.
I didn't see either of those. I so everything you just said is true, but you didn't totally answer my question, which might be my point.
Sorry. Hit me again.
What did you think of this movie?
Oh, what did I think of this movie? So yeah, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like,
see,
what do you,
I agree.
What you think of the movie, I feel like, is sort of inseparable from what you kind of, it's almost like, I feel like the question of what do you think of the movie is like, well, what did you think of this lady? You know, right? Like, isn't that kind of the same question? I think in terms
Maybe.
Of, I think, look, if you're asking me, like, I think in terms of movie making, in terms of the art of the documentary, I think it's very well done. Like, it looks fantastic. Like, you know, like some of the, like the shots of the inside of the machine and shit like that, I thought were really cool. You know, they talk to everyone that's important involved. Like, the use of news footage is really, like, great and compelling and sort of gives you a sense of how big this person was in the world. And, you know, shots of her with these important people or at these important meetings. Like, yeah, like, I thought it was really well made. I think ultimately its success as a piece of entertainment sort of depends about how you feel about the subject, right?
Well, right. The one thing is, like, the one part that's missing from what you just said, and I think from this movie, is like an arc, or maybe not an arc, because there is an arc, but an ending.
Well, I mean, I think
a denouement, a resolution of any kind. And it's not necessarily his fault. I mean, the story's sort of open-ended, I suppose.
Well, I mean, the ending is basically that they're on trial for fraud, right? Like, spoiler alert. That's the
yeah,
ending.
But I don't you feel like there were a lot of questions that aren't answered? Especially in terms of the chief question of the film, which is like, is this lady a soulless sociopathic con artist or a right-minded person whose thirst for sort of conquest of this mission made her insane?
Oh, see, I don't think I feel like that. I feel like the movie's pretty much like, check out this sociopath. You know what
okay.
I mean? I could be wrong about that, but that's where I'm at. I feel like the movie comes down for, you know, firmly on the side of this woman who's perpetrating a fraud on people, you know,
maybe she
started from a good from a good place, but
don't think that was an interesting question, whether or not it came from a good place and exactly how we got to the place that it got. I thought that was sort of the whole point. And that's where I just don't.
I think in the sense that the movie's trying to say that a lot of what you're seeing here, while fraudulent, is part of the culture of Silicon Valley, which is how this
culture.
Effort was able to amass so much money. Like I think that's an interesting point, But I don't think the movie's undecided on whether or not she's a fraud or not. But maybe that's just because I'm not undecided on whether or not she's a fraud.
Right. Again, I like she's clearly a fraud. At some point, I think the question is whether she was ever not a fraud.
I mean, to me, is it any different from Wild Wild Country, where we're just now at the part where they are, you know, poisoning the salad bar and the water supply with beavers and stuff, right? That's just where we're at, right?
Well, right,
unambiguously terrible behavior that, you know, you can see how they got to that path, but the behavior's unambiguously terrible.
Well, right, except I'm not sure we do see how they got to that path, and that's all I'm saying. I'm not really criticizing because it was fascinating. You're right. It looked incredible. It was incredibly well cut together with her interviews and news footage and interviews shot for the documentary.
I think she started with a real and interesting and extremely helpful idea of what if we could make the process of getting blood, obtaining blood from people easier and more comfortable, and get that information. We could do a lot in terms of disease. Like, I think that is a valid and worthy and non-fraudulent idea. It's just she didn't really know how to get there. You know what I mean? And because you have a company and you're trying to get people to invest, right? It's like, put it out there and figure it out. And then that's how you get to where you're getting, where it's eventually figure it out becomes, you know, fake it till you make it.
Right. Or it was a scam from much earlier than that. And I don't know.
I feel like, I don't know. Like, don't you feel like if it was a scam from much earlier than that, that they would have been better prepared not to be caught?
I don't know, man. Most people who want to do evil stuff like that are either too stupid or too hubristic to get to worry that much about getting caught.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe.
But I guess that's the stuff I was interested in that there's not really any way to get to the bottom of, at least for now. You know, she may come try to talk more about, who knows what'll happen in the future, because they haven't even started the trial yet, right?
Correct, at least as far as I know. I will say this, and maybe maybe this is telling. It's not one where I felt like, oh my god, I have to Wikipedia everything I didn't hear about the story, which sometimes, you know, like Wild Wild Country set me on a binge, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. But I would also agree with you that I was amazed that this got past me.
Yeah. And I certainly did not regret the 2 hours or whatever that I spent.
No.
On the story.
No.
You know what I mean?
It was 2 whole hours, but it was not, you're never bored watching this documentary.
Yeah.
Confused, perhaps, but never bored.
And sometimes, like, slack-jawed, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's some wild stuff here, some truly wild stuff that, boy, is it reflective of how problematic the American business world is.
Yeah, and look, if you work in Silicon Valley, just don't ever let yourself be caught dancing on camera. It's not.
Oh,
it's
God.
It's not going to go well for you. Like, it's just not.
Really, so many poor philosophical decisions of that nature, though.
Yeah, there really are.
Like, just like, it's easy good advice for literally anybody, but like, humility is really a worthwhile practice.
Yeah.
If not because you actually are humble, because like your comeuppance is coming.
Yeah. This is a specific interest where you should dance like someone's watching, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
But maybe now that someone's watching almost all the time, maybe you should always, every time, dance like someone's watching.
I guess. I'm in favor. There are some times where I think you really should dance like no one's watching, but.
I guess, but not with anything that has a future of any kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, if you're dancing about something that is not entirely in the past, it's going to come back. It's coming back to screw you up. It is. It's coming back.
It is.
And you are on video whenever you're dancing.
All right, I've done a poor job because we buried the lead, I feel like, or at least the lead item on the show this week. The thing that people are like watching and watching kind of in droves is Killing Eve. The show's ratings, in fact, are growing pretty much every episode. And this one, I guess, all because it aired on A&E in addition to BBC America, was by far the biggest one yet, which I think is really cool because the show's still really great. It's not a surprise, you know what I mean?
Sure. And it's not great in a different way.
Yeah, no, this could have been, like, if this episode was in season one, you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't have, you know, like, it'd just be like, oh, we're just at the halfway point, and now we're picking up the story, like, exactly where we left off, pretty much. So, I'm fine with that.
And in the same, I wasn't sure if we would get, and that may change over the course of the season, but you're right. This was just another good episode of Killing Eve, which is kind of what I was hoping it would be. I didn't need it to be wholly original. I didn't need a new take on this.
No. You're like, let's just put Villeneuve in some pajamas.
Right. We have not run out of rope for, spoiler alert, if you have not seen episode one, you're going to want to skip this for a second now. But, I was no less shocked and horrified and delighted and thrilled than I would have been last season when she snaps that kid's neck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like, whoa, you know what? Yes. Which was my reaction so many times last season.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that one. Like, I was not, that one I kind of saw coming. I just know her. I'm like, oh, I can see where this is going. And she's definitely going to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That didn't make it any less thrilling. And the one thing I will say, I feel like, is noteworthy about this episode is I really feel like the stuff between Eve and her husband, which has obviously been brewing now for a while, but I feel like it sort of came to a crescendo in to me a really interesting way, you know? Mm-hmm. And the scenes with them, trying to work this out, and her in the bathtub, and where she comes home and she's trying to be normal, and it's like the chicken's on the stove and it's in the fridge, and just great stuff. The dialogue in the show is tremendous, the action scenes in the show are tremendous, and it's like, you know, it's like a popcorn film every week.
Yep. It's really wonderful.
You know.
And I'm so excited it's back.
Yeah. And, you know, having this show, you know, centered around two women, and really you could argue three in a way, you know, not only is it like, hey, it's interesting to see it from this perspective, I think there are things that are feminine about this show in the context of being an action show that make it really unique and in some ways better. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
totally
more
agree.
Cerebral and thoughtful about the havoc that it's wreaking. And it's a special television show.
Totally agree. And even if it is just 'cause it's different, like, is there something inherently better about women-led action? Maybe not, but we don't see it all the time, which is new.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and no, I'm no shade against Liam Neeson, but you know what I mean? Like, he gets to make 15 of those, you know? And those are just the Liam Neeson ones before you get into, like, the Keanu ones or the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or The Rock's oeuvre or the entire career of Jason Statham or, you know.
Right.
And I have no problem with any of those things. Some of them I think are really great.
No, but we know what it looks like.
We know it exactly.
Really well.
The ground is well-worn. And this allows it to take on some of those sort of tropes and twist them in ways that are exciting, you know?
Totally.
I have no doubt that this is going to continue to barrel along. So, good for it. And they've already picked up a season 3, so...
We're going to get a few seasons out of this, and it's awesome.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to let you rave about The Shy now.
Because
I know you want to.
I do. I do want to. And it's not just because it's about my city or because it's made by someone who went to my high school. It's just... I really think it's a difference maker for Showtime in particular, in that it's the highest level of really intense, thoughtful TV drama. And I don't know if that doesn't sound original enough for people, or if I should go, you know, the obvious comparison in many ways is The Wire, and I don't want to overdo that because it's different than The Wire, but it's a really deeply thoughtful, emotional show with incredibly real, well-drawn characters about real struggle that real people deal with that I don't think enough attention is usually paid to, and I don't really know what more there is to say about it than that.
Yeah. I feel like we're almost sort of in a year of the worst situation where I don't think I like this show quite as much as you do, but I have nothing bad to say about it at all. You know, it's I would push back a little bit in the idea that, like, it's a breakthrough for Showtime. Like, this show fits in real nice to me with Billions on a Sunday night. You know, like they're.
Oh, but I think Billions was a different difference maker too.
Oh, all right, maybe you could say that. That's fair.
I would say the last, maybe not season one of Billions, but probably by the end of season one, certainly with season two of Billions, like that's up there for me. You know, the Billions, The Shy combo. Nothing's going to be Game of Thrones, but Billions and The Shy is up there with, you know, whatever. If it's going to be Westworld and friggin' what's the one we actually, the emotional show that we actually like? Why am I blanking on?
Are you talking about Sharp Objects, Big Little Lies?
Let's say Big Little Lies. That's not what I was. I don't know why I can't think of the show that was in my head a second ago. But I compare that favorably.
Yeah, I do think that these are shows that sort of put Showtime in the game. You know, I would argue that, you know, Shameless, which I don't think you've watched.
Succession is what I was thinking.
Succession, right? Yeah.
Succession was the HBO show that I had in my head that vanished for a brief.
God,
moment.
I really love Succession.
Too. But like, I think Succession and Billions compare reasonably with one another, and The Shy to me is just as good in a very different way as something like Big Little Lies or Sharp Objects.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I don't think I disagree with anything that you said, other than I feel like I don't like it. I just feel like I feel like you love this show, and I think it's really good. That's kind of where I'm at. If that's you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, that's fine, and I obviously have several reasons I especially love it, but like, objectively, I just don't know what you could complain about.
Yeah, I got nothing to complain about, and I would also add.
I mean the royal, you know, the royal, the general you.
I would also add to you that it's nice to, you know, Shameless does this generally in a more comedic tint, but it's nice to see more shows where people are like really thinking about how they're gonna, you know, survive the winter, survive the night, have a place to sleep. You know, there isn't enough of that on TV.
On some level, it's what, like, by far the most human brain power around the world and even in any given city is spent on is, like, how do I make it to tomorrow, next week, next year, whatever.
Yeah.
And so little attention is paid to that on television. I think you're right.
I'm not sure why all those shows have to be in Chicago, but...
Because Chicago's it is. Great and everything should be in Chicago.
It is what it is. It's got a lot of rich people in Chicago, too, man. It's a lot of rich people.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's yeah, the Shy's great. And are people watching it? I don't even really know.
Do we ever know with the premium channels, really?
It can be hard to tell.
We know they're subscriptions, but do we ever know who's watching what? They don't really do ratings, do they?
Yeah, they have ratings. They don't always talk about them, and it's always tough because a lot of those shows re-air so much, you know? Right. So you're like, you know, the original rating may not tell that much of the story.
Well, and now when all these stations have a streaming service, what does the original rating tell of anything, really?
Per Wikipedia, the season two premiere averaged 454,000 viewers. Which unfortunately
it doesn't feel like a ton, but it sounds
reasonable. And the lowest to date for the show, unfortunately.
Oh, that's not good.
And the source on that is Showbuzz Daily, apparently.
Well, but again, I don't know what that means.
Season finale averaged or had 872,000. If that gives you an idea.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means though. Maybe it means that it's gonna come back. What am I trying to say? Maybe it's going to build over the course of the season. Maybe that means it's a show that has more streaming viewership. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to see the context too. I mean, look, the other thing is it's like, I would say that is more people that watched The Wire when it was airing. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
who knows?
I mean,
like sometimes these things become, you know, successes. People find these properties on a streaming service years later or, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's Breaking Bad where they discovered it in the middle and then it explodes. Sometimes it's underappreciated. You know, just what it is.
I just don't know that heavy TV drama is the most populous entertainment. But I do think it's just a great show. Just great.
I don't know, to just be blunt, like how many black people have Showtime? You know what I mean? Like I feel like this is a show a lot of black people would watch if they knew about it. You know what I mean?
I would think so. It's a very black show.
Yeah, it's a very black show. It's really well done, and I know that the African American community is hungry for some of these types of stories told at that level of quality. So,
it's one episode, but I'm really interested and excited that we're getting Ronnie's backstory, like him coming out of the military. I don't know that people realize how common a story that is, particularly in that community of veterans being left to fend for themselves, essentially, and screwed over and ending up in a bad way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a hell of a first episode.
For sure. Yeah. And I just love all the acting is so good. Man, yeah, and it's going to be an interesting season.
All right. I think that covers all our TV for this week.
Man, it was a real blitz of television. We really smashed through it there. We didn't. No, we didn't.
No, what'd I miss? What'd I miss?
You missed the thing I just watched minutes ago. Well, hours ago now.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I did miss the thing that I literally was watching before I walked into this room.
Did you finish it?
Yes, I did. Fosse Verdon, ladies and gentlemen. Here's my quick take on Fosse Verdon so far. I'm not sure that this show yet has excelled past the pitch meaning to me. You know what I mean? Where you're like, all right, we got Rockwell, he's gonna be Fosse, and we're gonna give him a comb over wig, and strap on a beard. We got Michelle Williams. We let those two interplay, and then we're just gonna grab some people from some shows you like. You know, we got Paul Reiser over here, And we got, let's take that girl from You're the Worst over there. And, you know, oh, there's the guy from Californication over here. You know what I mean? Like, and we'll throw a room.
Which guy from Californication?
Evan Handler is who I was thinking of in that.
That's who that was. Yeah. Of course. You know. I was like, who is that? I know that voice. I know who this is. I can't place it. It was Evan Handler.
Yeah. I'm not okay. in love yet, but I also think, like, you know, I'm going to need a few episodes.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I mostly agree. If that's all this show ever is, you're watching, right?
I don't know. I 10 years ago, yeah, probably. In okay. this hyper-competitive TV okay. environment, I want the story of the two of them and their relationship. I want it to be compelling, and I'm hoping that this is like trust, like, you know what I mean? Where it's like yeah. first episode, you think, okay, this is a thing, and it's pretty interesting. Although we were like the first episode of Trust, as I recall. But then it sort of shot into like a whole nother level, you know?
What do you know about Gwen Verdon?
Nothing.
Me nothing. Neither. Okay. Had you ever heard of her?
No.
Okay. Me neither.
Bob Fosse, I had heard of, but, you know, I mean, I knew he was a guy that choreographed a bunch of musicals. I'm not interested in that's
right.
That's
so we have very similar positions on this. And like, other than Liza Minnelli, if there were famous people we were supposed to know, I did not know them. But I can watch Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams all day. So as long as they keep those guys on screen, I'm watching this. I hope I'm with you. This felt like, not even a pilot, but a pitch meeting.
Yeah.
But I think I got 10 episodes of this pitch meeting in me.
All right.
So like I hope it's more, but I have a lot of trouble seeing me turning off Sam Rockwell being paid to dance and be like a problematic auteur.
He's a much better dancer than I had realized.
Oh, Sam Rockwell's famous for his dancing. I mean, most of it's goofy dancing, yeah. But he's definitely, he can move.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of goofy dancing in this. It's much more classic dancing.
I don't know if you've seen Mr. Right.
I don't think I have.
It is one of my favorite, utterly pointless and psychotic movies. Because it is utterly pointless and psychotic. But it's basically Sam Rockwell dancing and Anna Kendrick doing her like lovable Anna Kendrick thing.
Yeah, and I definitely have not seen that.
It's like an hour and a half of utter madness that I found tremendously enjoyable in the vein of like Seven Psychopaths, in the vein of Martin McDonagh early work, like In Bruges or Seven Psychopaths.
Gotcha. I am on Sam Rockwell's IMDb, and that man has made a lot of movies that I have not seen.
Mr. Right. Strong. If you like In Bruges and you enjoy Sam Rockwell's dancing, I think you'll probably like Mr. Right.
Okay. You know what? The other thing that I really liked that I did not expect was Rockwell and Reiser going toe to toe.
Oh, Reiser, actually, if there was like a surprise, you know, if there's a Kevon Looney, if you will, of the first episode, it's definitely Paul Reiser.
Yeah,
he just comes in throwing heat, man. And you're like, oh, yeah, Paul Reiser's kind of a heavyweight. And I don't just mean that he's put on 30 pounds since I last saw him.
Yeah, it's interesting that he's like sort of settling into like, you know, taking some interesting dramatic roles, you know.
I'm here for adult character actor Paul Reiser.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of like this place that he's going to. Me too.
And Evan Handler was moderately unrecognizable in that makeup, but, you know, enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah, I caught him right away.
It's funny because I immediately knew it was someone I knew, but I couldn't place him until you said it.
Yeah, he's for me, just sort of one of those guys where it's just hard for me to miss him. And he shows up in a lot of things that I watch. I don't know.
He also has an incredibly distinctive voice. Like, that was how I knew the person.
Yep. Oh, good old Charlie Runkle. All right, real quick, I sort of teased this earlier. I am curious that now that the NBA regular season is wrapping up today, mercifully. where are you at on NBA MVP?
I'm at Giannis. Giannis Antetokounmpo. But I do want to say I'm hard on James Harden in a lot of ways. And he's absolutely number two, and it's really not that big a gap. Because MVP, it whether people like it or not, it is a narrative award.
100%. So
the narrative matters. And the narrative of James Harden's season, as much as I want to be one of the people who's like, bah, low efficiency, all he does is gun. If I shot that much, I could score two. Blah,
he's not
blah, blah.
Low efficiency, though. Like, that's part of what's amazing about it, right?
Well,
it's high usage, but the efficiency is not that low.
It depends who you compare it to. But the point is, the narrative of this season, from my perspective, James Harden, is a season that could and very well should have been lost when the team came out healthy and playing like poop, and then pretty much all the other important players who hadn't left the team in the offseason got hurt. And James Harden went on one of the most historical scoring runs in the history of the game that not only turned around a season that was already going poorly, but utterly resurrected a team that a lot of people left for dead after a month, and they are now most people's consensus second most likely team to win the Western Conference. And that, it's an incredible feat. And to go out and score that way, even if I think Steph Curry could do it better with the same usage rate, what Harden did undeniably saved his team season and has been done by like two people in the history of basketball.
Yeah. Now look, and I'm not going to, you know, I mean, to the point that you made about Steph, like I'll ride for Steph over Harden, you know, in an overall conversation most times. But what I would say, and I mean this to Harden's credit, is that he did something this year that I don't think Steph could do, which is play 78 games at that usage rate. You know, like 36 minutes a game, 78 games for a guy who at times we have knocked because he's been out of shape. You know,
no,
like,
you're right. All that stuff is to his credit, and he was incredible shape this year, and
I'm cute.
We'll see what happens in the playoffs if that usage comes back to bite him in any way or appears to.
Sorry, hold on a second. I'm sorry. I've got a basketball reference ad running. I'm trying to kill. All right, we're good.
So we'll see if that ends up coming back to bite him in the playoffs, as it sort of seems to have done in the past. But again, what he's done this year is nothing short of incredible. What makes Giannis the MVP to me is A, his team's jump, which is, of course, in part due to the coaching change and some savvy adds to the roster, but is mostly about him just dominating, just being utterly dominant.
Well, and look, with the adds to the roster, too, it's, you know, to me, that's also part of the narrative, right? Like, the adds were built for, let's try to create a team around this guy. Like, let's find some guys who match his skills, which is also the way that Houston's built. So, that's kind of an even point. But it's like, this guy's such a transcendent player that if we find these things, I mean?
Even point. The jump in wins for the Bucks is more or less an even point to the season turnaround for Harden to me. The utter unstoppability that they both can reach offensively in different ways is equally remarkable. And Giannis is probably the defensive player of the year. And that's the difference.
Yeah. And that's the thing for me is, the real difference is that one guy's playing for a team that, you know, won, 10 more games? He's going to have the best record in the league, you know, in an easier conference, but still.
Not as easier as it has been.
Right.
Though.
That gap is less than it is. And then the other is that one is, you know, maybe the best defensive player in the game, certainly in the top five or six. And the other one is a guy that you have to hide on that end of the floor.
Well, I'm not even sure he's that anymore. I think he's probably pushing average as a defender because his effort level's way up.
I think Zach Lowe put this really well. Like, there are a couple of things, namely post defense, that he does very well. He's got active hands, but he's also a real matchup problem at times. You know,
His defensive attention rate, for lack of a better term,
it's higher. Yeah,
is much higher than it was a few years ago, certainly. And I think that's been gradual, but it's probably as good as it's ever been right now. And that matters.
But it's still not in the universe of exactly what Giannis is doing.
It's the difference between a guy who's finally trying, which makes him not an entire liability on that end of the floor, and a guy who is quite literally probably the best defender in the league.
Yeah. So
it's just not as great as Harden is, and as much as I don't even – none of this is really to discredit him, because there's just not a lot of people in the history of basketball who can affect the game the way Giannis does at both ends. But he's doing that right now, and I'm sorry, that means he's the MVP.
Yeah, and that's why – to me, that's why I'm with you. I feel strongly about it, but I also think Harden's awesome, and if, you know, in a world that Giannis wasn't having this season, I'd have no problem giving him the MVP. I honestly worry about, like, that we may look back on this season, you know, as like a historic offensive season and go, how did this guy not win the MVP? But I think it's the right thing. So
I think if we do, I think it's one of those where, you know, I don't have a good Oscar example, but there's like the Oscar years where you go, how did X, Y, or Z not win? And you look back and you're like, Crash won? What the F? And then there's the years where it's like, oh, well, how did Kevin Spacey not win supporting actor for Usual Suspects? And it's like, well, Brad Pitt won for 12 Monkeys, and that was also pretty incredible.
Yeah. I really thought that you were talking about Oscar Robinson seasons when you started that argument.
No, but there are certainly Jordan seasons where you're like, it is so dumb that they gave Charles Barkley or Karl Malone the MVP.
Yeah.
It's blatant Jordan fatigue. And then, you know, there are years where you look back and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, Magic or whoever did this and wasn't MVP. And it's like, oh, it was Jordan.
Yeah. Or like that 87 season where Magic won the MVP, but like Bird had maybe his best offensive season. And
Jordan scored like 37 a game.
Yeah. Yeah. But right. Like Magic was the MVP that year. I think that was right. The right call.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's just.
So there are years like that. And I think that's what this is. That's what this is it's the greatness of Giannis right now is just, it's greater than the greatness of Harden, but they're both great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're on the same page about that. I kind of think Harden's going to win, to be honest.
He might. And that I think has more to do with, like, sometimes it takes an extra year for these things.
Yeah.
Like, Giannis is new, and I think there's still too many voters who want to make a guy wait for whatever reason.
Yeah, I also think there are some voters who feel like they owe him one because they, you know, screwed up and voted for Russ. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we've actually swung too far on the Russ thing now.
Do we? My only Russ thing was just he wasn't the MVP that year. I don't have anything about, you know.
Not necessarily.
Russ is what Russ is. He's incredible effort, incredible numbers, great player, can't shoot, and, you know, you have to figure out how to deal with it. That's what Russ is.
It's more than that, though, and I think the notion to which his now routine averaging of a triple-double has been like, I think is probably inappropriate. Like, it is arbitrary.
I don't know if it's whatever so much as I think we're putting the triple-double in proper perspective now. You know what I mean?
Well, I think we're putting the triple-double in proper perspective in as much as it's a random arbitrary statistic. But I'm not sure. I think we have overly pigeonholed Russ's triple doubles into like a ineffective, not helpful thing, which is not entirely true.
Yeah, I don't know. You know?
And again, I don't necessarily mean the two of us, but I like the national conversation on it has become like, yeah, he's still over there getting those triple doubles, but whatever, they're kind of BS. And it's like, that when we gave him the MVP, we had to say that because he wasn't actually the most valuable player in the league. But this is what he does is remarkably valuable.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think there were times in that MVP season, you know, particularly with things like rebounds or assists, where he was hunting a little bit for some of
and
those
he
numbers.
He still does. He went, when he went 20-20-20 the other night, he was hunting the hell out of that. But I think he believes, and he's mostly right, that him hunting those things is good for the squad.
It's tough to argue that at this point.
Yeah.
And
although it's a little bit unpleasant for a basketball purist in a certain way, it's also remarkable and incredibly fun to watch.
Yeah. As it has been much of the NBA this season, and I'm hoping the playoffs will be the same.
You still have the Warriors?
I do still have the Warriors because I just think it's far and away the best bet.
Okay. Warriors are the field.
Yeah, tonight Warriors of the field. I'm taking the Warriors. But I have to think about it, which is more.
My
than
dad
it's been
took
the
field
season.
For $100.
Yeah. Like I don't think it's crazy to take the field. I'll still take the Warriors. You're not crazy to take the field in my mind.
I think maybe you are.
Okay.
And I might come to regret that. There's no reason for me to say that. I understand why people are saying what you just said, but also, I kind of think the Warriors might really run through this thing.
Here's the case for the field. The Rockets are back, and obviously could have won it last year. I do think the Bucks, if they get there, could be a real matchup problem for them. And have played them well historically. They don't play very often, but in this Giannis era, have done well against them. I think that there are a couple of teams out there that are like, well, if they put it together and really click, that are threats, you know what I mean? I put like the Celtics and the Sixers kind of in that category.
Can I ask you something though?
Yeah.
Cause this is we don't need to construct the argument. It's been constructed. I'm very familiar with it. I'm sure anyone who cares about this discussion is very familiar with it. But with all that said, all the teams clicking and all that, if the Warriors really click, is there anything any other team can do to even win two games in a series?
Yeah, shoot a crap ton of three-pointers, which is why you still got to worry about Houston.
Yeah, I still don't think if the Warriors are playing really well, which is how they've been playing really the last couple weeks anyway, I don't think it matters. I don't think any of this matters. I think they've got some ref issues because they've really gone out of their way to piss those guys off. I think they've got.
Yeah, I think a lot of that gets put aside for the playoffs, though. I do.
Maybe, but the foul shot discrepancy has been alarming since the Minnesota incident, and I think they got some of the tougher matchups that they've seen in this 5-year run. I also think they have by far the most talent they've had in this 5-year run, and if all that. The way DeMarcus
you do.
Cousins, oh yeah,
I'm not sure I agree. I mean, you see him a lot more than I do. I was in the building for the Minnesota incident.
People are
by the way,
confused about this because they're discounting the starting lineup as if it's the same. It's not the same. It's not the same.
I just think that so many of
the bench,
yeah, the bench
teams that were starting Zaza Pachulia and Harrison Barnes, and it's silly. It's silly. It's not even reasonable to make a talent comparison to any team before Kevin Durant. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. But
okay.
Here's what we're talking about is that the a lot of the key, you know, outside the big four guys in the rest of the Durant era are not as good as they were. And Draymond is also not as good as he was. So,
except he's been shooting like 38% from three since the All-Star break and playing like the defensive player of the year for the last month. So like that's why I said if they click, like, yeah. You're right. if you look at the bulk of the season, Sean Livingston is not as good as he was last year. If you look at the last month, he's shooting 65%. You know what I mean? Like, I had this argument on the radio the other day. If they all play the way they played over the course of the season, you know, if you aggregate everyone's season and they play more or less the aggregate version, then yeah, they could struggle. They will struggle. There's going to be some challenges. If they all play the way they've shown they can still play at various times this year, not usually all together, it's not close.
Well, look, I think we can almost all agree that they were mostly playing possum is the right word, but saving some things for this part of the season, rather intentionally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're ramping up. They're ramping up. But yeah. Let me just make a quick point to you, okay? The first Kevin Durant Warriors team started Zaza Pachulia at center. Kevon Looney wasn't really playing yet. Patrick McCaw was Ian Clark, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, who are still there. After the top seven, which included Zaza, the biggest minutes were JaVale McGee, David West, and Patrick McCaw. I would rather have this Kevon Looney than that JaVale McGee. You're starting DeMarcus Cousins instead of Zaza Pachulia. And on the bench, you have what? Like, Jonas Jerebko, Alfonso McKinney, Quinn Cook, who's shooting like 65% for the last month. These guys are better than those guys. Ian Clark? Like, Quinn Cook right now is better than Ian Clark.
Yeah. Right.
So, and you're starting DeMarcus Cousins. So, like, the whole conversation pretends that Zaza Pachulia is, and DeMarcus Cousins are comparable, but it's the talent level is literally as big a gap as you could have in the entire league.
It's pretty big.
I just don't think, if you really look at it, I don't think there's any question that this is the most talented Warriors team. It's just, it's been a weird piecemeal year with guys missing time and coming back at different times and playing poorly at various times. If they all play to their ability together, they are way better than anybody in the league, maybe better than anybody ever.
Does a Celtics team that has Hayward playing well and looking healthy team and you know, has Hayward and Tatum and Brown playing to their potential, and Horford and Kyrie, like, that's, is that scary at all? It's pretty scary to me if they're yes, playing their best.
The Celtics are maybe the Sixers, but really the Celtics are the only team in the entirety of basketball that can put up a similar starting lineup where if they all play up to their level, it's just ridiculous how much talent that starting lineup has. The difference is, you know, I would say DeMarcus Cousins has shown more physical improvement and more ability to be his old self than Gordon Hayward has over the course of the year. And Steph has had a much better year than Kyrie Irving and so on and so forth. You know, the Celtics have shown that highest level even less than the Warriors have course of the regular season.
Yeah. No, they're much less likely to get to that place. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
If they do, it's scary.
But even so, even if they do, like, let's say all the players on both the Celtics and Warriors are playing their absolute best. The top two are definitely Warriors, right? Durant and Steph's best is better than anybody the Celtics have. Then I guess you probably get to Kyrie before Boogie, and then Tatum is in that area at his best. Is Jaylen Brown's best better than Klay Thompson or Draymond's? I don't think so. So even if they got there, the Warriors are still, I think, significantly better.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. That's why I'm taking the Warriors.
That's the thing. So for me, I get it. And maybe they're more vulnerable in as much as, like, we haven't necessarily seen that best all that much. But we definitely didn't see much of that best down the stretch last season, and they did still win the title. And I would argue they're a better team this year, roster-wise.
All right.
And they're playing better right now than they were late last year.
I would argue it's time for homework.
Yeah, let's hurry. We've spent way too much time today.
Yeah. All right, so we both were talking during the week about the new Billie Eilish album, which is nothing sells anymore. Nothing sells anymore, but it's lighting the streaming services on fire, I guess would be the appropriate parlance. It's being listened to a lot, and a lot of people are talking about it.
It's your business. You tell me the parlance.
Yeah. So that's what we're going with, the new Billie Eilish album, which is called, I had to write it all down. When we all fall asleep, where do we go? Check that out for this week. There's a little boutique show coming to premium cable called Game of Thrones.
I think it's Games of the Throne.
Yeah. That you might have heard of.
Throne Games. It's Throne Games.
Throne Games. Got it.
Yeah.
We're going to watch that and talk about it, along with the rest of the known world, I think. Mm-hmm. You've been watching in anticipation, right?
Yep, we are through season 6, so we got to cram season 7 into the last few days before the premiere on Sunday.
I texted you this over the weekend because I was watching season 7. It's like, even a season that we don't think of as like one of the best is so good, man. Like there's a lot of just meaningful stuff in this show.
You know what's high on the list of things I don't like? Cynical people being like, whatever, man. Season 7 sucked.
Yeah, that's dumb. It's dumb.
I'm really like, I want you. You just shove it so far up your rectum that I just don't even want to ever hear you talk ever.
If you may recall, when we did the year-end TV that year, that I had Game of Thrones really high on my list, and I made that argument that I think we were taking it for granted a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't. I think I took it somewhat for granted on that list because I wanted to mention other things, yeah. But like, this whole season 7 was bad, I bet it's going to suck thing is like, shove it.
Yeah, nope.
This is the most entertaining TV there is right now. And if you can't enjoy it, that's on you, bro.
Absolutely. All right. So, yeah. So we're obviously fired up for that. And we're also fired up for Our Planet, or at least I am, which is a Netflix nature documentary.
Yeah.
Getting some burn on my home screen as well. Like, they must know I'm fired up for it. I don't know.
It is all over my damn home screen because I do, you know, go to Blue Planet and like nature shows to fall asleep sometimes. But
by fall asleep, you mean get high too?
Well, I mean, oftentimes those are not mutually exclusive things.
Okay, fair enough.
But more to the point, that is certainly my plan this week. Is as like we got the whole house getting together for Game of Thrones on Sunday, and then I can finally, after like locking into the violence for an hour and a half or whatever it ends up being, I can relax with a large bong and Game of Thrones.
I mean,
and our planet, the beautiful scapes, the wonderful attributes of our home that will no longer be there in a matter of months at this rate.
I got to be honest, and it just occurred to me, like, I don't know that I have even room for like epic much watched television to just plop into my Sunday night. Like, Billions and the Shy aren't going anywhere. You know what I mean? John Oliver,
yeah,
and Veep are still around. Like, there's already lots of Sunday night watching. I'm already doing, you know?
But you got Monday. You know, you can save stuff for Monday if you need to chill out with Our Planet before going to bed.
It's true.
We're going to get into it a little bit. Is that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I promise I will not watch a minute of it unintoxicated. That's my pledge to you and to our listeners.
That makes
that
me
I
so
will,
happy.
I will under no circumstances watch a second of Our Planet without some sort of intoxicant running through my blood vessels.
All right. I like it. And then,
who wants to live life that way?
No. It's not really living, frankly. Finally, we're going to undertake Schitt's Creek, which is something I think we've talked about doing a couple of times in this podcast. And we're just jumping into episode one. I know they're on, what, season five now?
Season five just ended, but so many people have told me this is so good that the curiosity has gotten the better of me.
Yeah, and I like some of the people involved. I've heard similar things. So
I thought you were going to say you like some of the people who've told me it's good.
I don't know who's told you it's good, but probably. We know some of the same people. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. You don't hang out with jerks, mostly.
No, mostly good people. Yeah. The occasional jerk. I'm one of the worst people I hang out with, to be totally honest.
Me too. It's probably why we get along. All right. I think that's it. We can wrap it up there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone on long enough. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.